Hey there, Pounders. This is J.R. Wilco with this week's Unnecessary Foolishness. It's episode 32 of the Superfluous Poppycock podcast. Seth Warren and I will take care of part two of our mid-season report. We looked at the starters last week. It's going to be the bench this week. But first, I want to talk about how great the team is playing, even when Pop is resting everybody. What'd you think about the last couple of games, Seth?
I think the fact that we've got three Hall of Famers that are not playing right now, three starters and eventual Hall of Famers not playing, and we're winning, against good teams, I think is, well, except for Brooklyn, I think we ought to be feeling pretty good right now, especially being four games up in the Southwest with Houston's free fall. I think we couldn't ask for anything better to be resting those guys and to still be knocking down W's.
And not just W's. They beat the Raptors in Toronto.
In Toronto.
Of course, they were playing without DeMar DeRozan, and of course the Raptors haven't been playing very well. I mean, we gave them their fourth straight loss. But this is exactly the kind of thing that would encourage optimism among the Spurs faithful.
Yeah, and they haven't been playing well. Well, neither has Cleveland. But you know, these streaks of teams that have not been playing well, it just takes one win versus San Antonio, and then that's a rebound game. That's a turnaround game. You forget about the previous four or five losses or five out of six, whatever it may be, to beat a team like the San Antonio Spurs. So I really don't. I know they haven't been on a good path, but we've struggled with similar paths ourselves. I mean, I don't think our wins have been extraordinarily quality wins. I mean, we're giving teams over 105 points a game, and in still beating them in this five game stretch. So I'd like to see defense clamp down a little bit more, but the fact that we're still winning, you know, the Cav game, we had an epic performance from, Leonard, our small forward. We had an epic performance what's from that name? Guy with the big hands, but aside from that, we still didn't have Tony and Powell, which are pretty critical cogs within our offensive unit. So I still really think this is a very, very good five-game stretch. I mean, the Nuggets are a dangerous team, and we held pretty tight with the Nuggets at home last Friday, only to come out 118-104. I'm thrilled with the five-game streak, if that's what you're asking. I could be happier, but I'm happy.
The Spurs are the hottest team in the Western Conference. The Warriors and the Spurs are both 8-2. In their last 10 games. The Spurs have won five straight. The only other team that can say that is the Miami Heat at 16-30. So, I mean, everything besides the injury woes, but it's the middle of the season. It's kind of exactly what you would expect. But Pop is getting the team rest. There's no way that Kawhi wouldn't be playing if it was the playoffs.
No. And you and I, we talked about it and laughed about it. I said going into that Brooklyn game after the Cav game, you gotta sit Kawhi. Why? Granted, he's young. He's early in his career. He's putting up numbers. Do we care about that? No, we're Spurs.
Yeah.
With Pop leading the team.
You told me to rest him. I'm like, he'll be out there. He's young. He'll bounce back, and he wasn't. He wasn't out there. Two straight games with sore hand, and they took care of business in both games. And I mean, LaMarcus isn't playing the way that he was in that huge stretch where he was making 70% of his shots. But
I got to be honest. I'm really starting to want a redo on LaMarcus's grade.
No, It's a week ago. We were sitting here. We gave him a pretty fair grade, and you already want to redo it.
I got rebounds in my head. It's the free throws. It's the free throws that really, really stick out to me. Both
at the end of one of each one of those pair that he had there.
You know, and I'd like to know at least that LaMarcus realizes this and owns it. you know, I don't want to hear rumblings of discontent from him again. Again, yeah. We've covered that. We think that's kind of alternate facts that those stories were out there. But I just don't want to hear anything out of LaMarcus when you're going one of two or even less at the line in a critical moment.
He hit 9 of 11 for the game. That's yes. That's well over his average. I mean, this is look, and he had that great contest at the end to make sure that Powell didn't have an open court in front of him. He got there and got in his way, made him flinch before he hit that or tried to hit the game tire.
Yeah, he ran blindly towards the ball handler, and he wasn't even facing him. It was a flailing attempt to avoid a foul, and he really was only successful because he's 7 foot tall, not because he, quote, contested.
You can be such a hater when you want to be.
See, and I feel like sometimes we watch a different video, JR. His air quotes, contest, was borderline hilarious to watch, and I'm just thankful that he didn't run over Powell. Or Powell didn't think twice and pump fake and draw a 3-point foul. I don't give LaMarcus anything here.
He sprinted to get in the way, and then he pulled back his arms to be sure he wasn't called for a foul. There was daylight between the two of them. But why argue the point? I mean, he missed the freebies, so you wouldn't compliment him if he pulled your two kids out of the path of a runaway train.
You know, inevitably, he'd go one of two or O of two when it mattered, and the train would shrink my family. I'd lose one kid, if not both kids. So, no, I'm not going to give him credit. I give him his due when he deserves, but a star making that kind of money shouldn't hurt us at the line 2 out of the last 3 games at the end, period. And incidentally, sprinting to get in the way isn't what I'd call a good contest, but, you know, all praise LaMarcus.
Goodness.
Hey, JR. You know, by the way, I have these two massive splinters in my hand getting infected, and they're making me sick. I sure wish LaMarcus was here to remove one or none of them.
Oh, my goodness. I just don't think that you could pay for perfection, right? I mean, he hit better than his average. Yeah, those two misses looked really ugly. But you look at the box score, and you go, he hit 9 of 11. And there's no such thing as, I mean, you can't put a dollar amount on anything. I mean, you want a guy being clutch at the end. You didn't 0-for-2 like in the Cleveland game. So it's a step forward, huh? What do you say?
And let me read you this quote by LaMarcus after the game. Quote, "I'm going to be mad about this for a while," said Aldridge, who finished 9 of 11 from the line. Yeah. Quote, "I'm a lot better than this," end quote. You're exactly right, and you're being paid a lot better than this. And for everybody who would say, yeah, but, you know, Timothy Duncan, he buried us at the line quite a bit of times. There was a lot of times where he missed free throws in the clutch. When LaMarcus steps up to become the best defensive player of the last decade, then I'll cut him a little bit more slack on the free throw line. But until then, I guess I'm more like Pop. You know, results don't negate how you got there.
Man. All right. Well, at least you have high standards, regardless of whether or not you've got issues about fairness. I just don't think you can pay for perfection. But let's set that aside, though. All right, we'll agree to disagree on LaMarcus. But at this point, we need to finish our midseason grades, right? So it's part two of the midseason grades, and I've got to start with String Bean. Got to start with DeJounte Murray and just the. Oh, just the revelation that he's been. I don't know.
And you like String Bean. I don't like String Bean. I think it's negative.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's like calling somebody pot roast.
Explain to me how that's worse than his actual technical nickname he grew up with, Baby Boy.
Well, we're not arguing Baby Boy.
That's his nickname. That's his.
Like demanding perfection from LaMarcus. I don't want DeJounte to be Baby Boy either. I like Spider or something along the lines of Spider, even though Durant kind of took the Durantula and how stupid that is. But at least DeJounte kind of fits that mold of playing like a spider.
Man, I regardless of what we wind up calling him besides DeJounte, and that's maybe a story for another day when we could talk about how, I don't know, there's been a movement recently in the comments in PTR to call Kawhi the system, because he's been talked about as a system player the whole time, and they're saying,
actually,
no, he's not
really,
a
yeah,
system.
Normally I hate nicknames. I like that. I actually
that's
do like
pretty
that.
Good, but his name is Kawhi. His name is so freaking cool. You can't really go anyplace better than it. That's why no nickname gathers any momentum with him. And DeJounte's pretty... pretty system. Unique too.
Now, DeJounte lends itself to DJ for me.
Yeah, DJ, DJ M. But I love the way he's playing. I did not expect anything from him until the end of his second year. The way that Corey Joseph came along slowly is kind of what I was expecting from him. But they got rid of Nicholas Laprovittola because they saw what he was doing in Austin. They were ready for him to start doing it at the NBA level. He's starting games and isn't embarrassing himself or the team being out there. That's the first step. But he's already scored 24 points in an NBA game. I mean, just the speed with which he can get from the three-point line to the rim is breathtaking.
Well, and he's sneaky, yeah. Mobile too. He's got the Euro step. And the fact that Pop is trusting him at end of games, as we saw the other night, is monumentally impressive. I would like to see DJ gain some weight. I really, really like him put a little bit more on.
The Spurs have put him on shakes, so they're helping him.
I think he will. He's 6'5", 170 right now, just fresh out of college. He's a sting bean. I a little bit more time this offseason at Taco Cabana would help. And I think that's probably the direction he's going. He adds a little bit of weight, but retains most of that speed. He's going to be – I feel so good with DeJounte.
It's frightening how thin he is. And that's one of the reasons why I like string bean, because I think about it affectionately. But I'm just over 6 feet tall. I'm 170 pounds. And nobody – and like everybody I work with has – bellies, you got little paunches, you got little love handles. I don't. I'm pretty lean, pretty thin. But still, I mean, like 170 pounds stretched across a 6'5 frame. Yeah. It's ridiculous. So incredibly skinny. But, you know, you go back and look at Kawhi Leonard's rookie season, and he's right. Not quite that thin, but he's close to it. So
he gained some. If you look at Kawhi, he gained some, and he gained almost that David Robinson mentality of just lean muscle. Mm. And that's mostly what Kawhi put on. So I'm hoping that we see a lot of that out of DeJounte, but he's so wiry is the best word when I watch him play, because even when he bounces off of guys, it's almost a scripted or a designed bounce.
No, right. I mean, right. Touch on a fantastic point about DeJounte is his body control.
Yeah.
Some guys look like they are being bounced around, and some guys look like they are bouncing around. When he takes contact, he absorbs it and moves with it and still winds up kind of square to the basket. I mean, he's terrifying in the open court. The plays that he scored on against the Cavaliers when they were in their fast break was just like over and over. I'm like, oh my goodness, they can't stop him. When he's in transition, when he's got a little fast break going, it's ridiculous. He was making good decisions, handing the ball off. He wasn't taking it all himself like he tended to for a while when he was playing in garbage time when he first came out. And he's been fantastic to be able to let Pop rest Tony until he's fully 100%. Going back to a point we were talking about earlier in the season, you only want Tony out there when he is 100%. And when you can go to somebody like DeJounte and go DeJounte Patty throughout the game, you can let Tony rest and bring him back when he's 100%, because he's really good this year when he's 100%.
Yeah. Well, I just look across our roster now and you know, you've got the age in Manu at 39, and then, guessing your next oldest, obviously you're going to go Powell at 36. Then you've got Tony at 34, tied with Joel Anthony, our new addition, at 34. But the drop-off from there is pretty significant. I mean, you really – David Lee at 33, but for the most part, we're all – in the mid-20s. I mean, you got
some youngsters.
Juice at 27. You got Danny Green at 29. LaMarcus is old. He's the veteran at 31. I mean, DeJounte at 20 and Kawhi at 25. Even Patty Mills at 28. We've got a solid foundation. You know, you got Dwayne Dedman, and we can get into Dwayne. I'm a little worried about how well Dwayne has done, making less than $3 million a year. Looks as though he's going to get some significant carrots dangled his way here pretty quick.
Oh,
so we could lose Dwayne if we're not willing to pony up. But if we were able to keep him, and I'm hoping we throw everything out there to do that, he's just 27. It's just amazing. Our nucleus just continues to plug along.
Dwayne is so efficient in on offense. I mean, he plays so within himself. He hardly ever looks out of control. He rolls to the rim great. Obviously, there's all of the alley oops that he had.
The crazy lobs
that he's just grabbing and pulling down and slamming. Not as many recently, but the way that he plays on defense is just. I mean, he can keep that up. And his ability to knock down the 15-18 footer. Like you saw against Toronto, he's so smooth, he's so within himself to shoot it, and to play and to shoot like that. Again, he's 27 years old, but only been playing 9 years, so his game's still developing. I'm so happy with him, and you said that we might need to let him go. Jonathan Simmons and Dwayne are the two guys that are in that spot, but I see Simmons as being able to be the more likely that we let go. You gotta hang on to a big man that can move like Dedmon and play defense like that.
Sure. But we don't have the Danny Green backup, though. That's the thing. And I don't, you know, we'll get into this on grades. When Kyle Anderson is your Danny Green backup, I think we go after Simmons pretty hard, especially for his defensive chops. I mean, I would like to see us go hard after Simmons and Dedmon, possibly even Lee. We've got Powell locked up through next year. I'd love to see those three guys retain. And I think Lee's on a 2-year, I believe. So Simmons and Dedmon are going to be the ones that I really, really want to focus on keeping. I'm okay if we lose Joel Anthony and Ben Forbes potentially.
Well, let's go Simmons, ahead. And, yeah. We've talked about DeJounte. We talked about Dwayne. Let's go ahead and talk about Simmons now. I mean, he had that.
We got to grade these guys. We graded
the starters. We don't have to grade these guys too. Throw some arbitrary number or letter at them. You want to do?
I'm gonna grade them. I'm gonna give DeJounte an A. Okay. In fact, I might even give DeJounte an A+ at this point.
All right. What do you got for Dwayne? Because we talked about him already.
Dedmon, again, and I don't know that this is unfair, but I think you have to weigh expectations.
No, it's
quite
absolutely
by
expectations and role. I mean, if I'm throwing something at him, I would say you can't really grade him less than a B+, can you?
No. In fact, I was going to go A on Dedmon, maybe even A-. But I definitely would give him both A's at this point.
So Jonathan Simmons, he had that awesome game coming right out of the gate, and then he kind of fell off a little bit. I had a little bird tell me at the AT&T Center after that Pop had ripped him after that game because that slam that he put down in JaVale McGee's grill he should have been dribbling that out because it was the last possession. There was no need for him to do that. And so I almost kind of felt like what happened after that over the next couple of weeks was him kind of getting his groove back, because he obviously started the season with a groove but really kind of got knocked down a peg. He's been playing very well recently. He's been shooting from three pretty well. He's been definitely bringing the defense. He's got incredible motor, and he's got his head in the game, and obviously Pop trusts him because, like you say, until the injury started, Kyle Anderson was just not seen unless it was garbage time.
Right. And, you know, again, I don't want to divulge too much before we get to Kyle, but considering how I see Kyle as a shooting guard, I'm actually going to give Jonathan an A-.
Okay.
Because I value what he's done. The defensive chops
from expectations
alone,
and role, yeah, I get it.
His motor, and I said it at the beginning of the season, I'll say it again, we're going to be talking about Jonathan Simmons as a strong sixth man of the year candidate within the next, I was hoping, and I was optimistically claiming that it would be this year, but I would say within 2 years we're going to be talking, almost like a Jamal Crawford type of role, but with athleticism.
Well, if you want to talk about guys coming off the bench in a sixth man role, then we got to talk about Manu, our sixth, actually won sixth man of the year. He's been shooting incredibly well from 3-point range. He's having, he's really having to design his game. He only drives to the basket a few times per game because he's having struggles being able to drop the ball in. But it was really, really a bad situation when the Cavs came, when LeBron hit that crazy 32 footer at the end of regulation to bring that game back. Everything was going poorly. It was bad. Pop put Manu in and completely changed the rhythm and the flow of the entire game. And right. Yes, Patty Mills hit the three that changed the complexion of overtime and pretty much put the Spurs on top to stay. But it was Manu that stopped the momentum changed the momentum, right, and stopped the Cavs from really running away with that game.
You're exactly right. And I caught myself watching, you know, earlier. There's a lot of us, I think, as fans that you know, see him going gracefully, see him, you know, at the twilight of his career and think, you know, it's going to be hard to replace him. And I don't think we truly realize how difficult it will be to replace him, Manu, mainly for what you just said, the intangibles, the way that he manages and delegates a game. Manu is that guy. Like you just said, you don't pick that up in the box score, but when you watch the game and you understand the game, and especially as a Spurs fan, you see, wow, this tide really shifted. When did it shift? Let me look in the time. Oh, wow, same minute Manu came in. Mm-hmm. Oh, and when did it get away from us? Oh, yeah, when Manu rested. Yeah, he's that – I don't care if he's 39 or not. He's that guy that is so crafty on the court. Yeah. And that was – you know, that was my biggest concern losing Timmy, is not the 7 foot, not the rebounding, not the defense, but that intangible that we were going to lose. And sure enough, we've seen that. But Manu, it's given Manu's intangible, I think, an even greater light to shine. I mean, it really has exposed, for me at least, how invaluable he is to our team and to our franchise.
Yeah, that game was just phenomenal. And he's had a few streaky parts of the season, a couple of games here or there where he hasn't played very well. But I mean, overall,
I don't want to be just shrugged off by, oh, he's just giving everybody an A. We have the best bench in the league.
Yeah,
pretty much everybody ought to get an A. There will be some that don't get A's. Spoiler.
You want to give Patty Mills an A too?
Patty Mills, we don't even need to discuss. You know my love for the little Australian. I just can't praise Patty. He's a perfect backup. Patty would be a starter on many teams within our system. He is an absolutely perfect backup point guard. He's a spark plug. He's a guy that can rattle off 25 in a night in the span of 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that you mentioned Simmons' motor. Patty has got a motor. He can stay in front of guys. He's constantly hustling and fighting. He's, you know, he reminds me of George Hill in the consummate teammate and the consummate basketball player that you want if you're a coach.
I
give Patty an A, and the only reason I don't give him a higher grade is because I expected Patty Mills to play like Patty Mills. So I'm not getting anything that I didn't expect to get, but I'm just so glad that I'm getting it. He's got an A.
How about David Lee?
You know, again, factoring in expectations, what we thought we were getting, we were just...
Oh, if we're going by what we thought we were going to get, I would get him A++, because I didn't think that he would be anywhere. I had no idea that he would have the hustle that he has. I mean, like, there have been multiple times this season where I've seen him guiding.
I said, just don't. I mean, basically a David West role. Just get out there, let our big guy rest. Don't lose the game for us. Don't lose the lead too bad. Just stand out there. That's what I thought we were getting with David.
He's been less of that kind of replacement. He's been more like Boris Diaw. I've seen him on multiple possessions just back his guy in from well out beyond 18 feet and get whatever kind of score he wants. He's got incredible vision. The touch passes are there. He's guiding guys around on offense and defense, telling them where they're supposed to be. I'm just like crazy impressed with what he's brought so far this season. I really like the guy.
Absolutely, every one of those plays that LaMarcus likes to take off and not get real rough, David Lee is always the guy, 100% of the time, down low, banging their bigs. And you got to give props for that, because we need that guy. We need somebody down low. I guess Anthony will add that now, that and six fouls. But Lee is a perfect example of a guy that it just puts on a hard hat and comes to work. And I, you know, knowing that, knowing what you just said as well, I have to give David Lee an A+. He, in my mind, he's revived his career.
No doubt. No doubt. In fact, it could be difficult for us to retain him. Yeah, he's played so well. Tell me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to talk I have to talk about my boy. I have to talk about the Latvian. Davis Bertāns has just been... I'm so excited about Davis, about DeJounte and Kawhi playing together for the next 5-7 years.
Future.
I mean, could you see them
me
being...
About Bertāns.
Could you see them being the next big
three? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And I think Bertāns, his ceiling is so much higher than we can even envision. I really do believe he has so much further to go. We've only seen glimpses of what he's capable of. And I think, he's going to be one of those players that really develops over 2-3 years. But in 2-3 years, we have this conversation. I'm fairly confident everyone in the league will know the name Davis Bertāns. The problem I have with him, and I see this every single time I look at him, you remember Scott Farkas off the Christmas Story?
Bully? I think we've,
I don't know if he looks like Farkas, if he looks like that kid, or do you remember the movie The Burbs with Tom Hanks?
Yeah. I mean,
there was the doctor
movie,
that
I remember him.
Dr. Klopek. That lived next door, the serial killer. Well, I don't know if it was his son or, his live-in, whatever it was. There was a redheaded guy with these goofy, like just ingrown, nasty redheaded mullet kind of thing going on in that movie. And I just get glimpses of that every time I see Bertāns. It's almost like he's got a red-haired mullet kind of coming in, but he doesn't. I guess what I'm saying is if Bertāns would clean up a little bit more, I could really fight for his grade probably a little bit.
Vocally. He's so much more athletic than I had in my wildest dreams I thought he could be. He even hit, I believe it was against Toronto, it was within one of the last two games, where he hits like a step back fading pull up 3-pointer with he just pulled on it. And it was gorgeous. His 3-point stroke is as pretty as it gets. And his athleticism, the way he chases down, hunting for blocks on defense, the way that he maneuvers around guys, the way he handles the ball, elevates and dunks. I mean, all of it. And he really looks to move the ball as well. That's what's amazing. That a guy is 24 years old, it's his first year in the Spurs system, and he's continually passing up pretty good shots to continue to move the ball and keep it going. I mean, it's consummate Spurs ball, and I'm smitten with him.
Yeah, no, it's easy to be, and you hear me throw around the word motor quite a bit when we're talking about these guys. I don't remember a bench squad that was so thoroughly possessed by all of these motor guys as I do this year. And by motor, I don't even know how to articulate as much as every time I watch him, and even the body language of a guy like Bertāns, a guy like, Deadman, David Lee, even as a veteran to come in, Murray, guys like this, and I think of it, I see it specifically with Bertāns, he so wants to be there, and he so wants to learn, and he so wants to improve, and every play, he just doesn't take a play off. He's constantly going at it.
No, you're right. No plays off.
I've seen a lot of lapses in his game, but as a rookie, and especially as a European rookie coming over to our game, I don't really hold his defensive lapses against him. I, on the contrary, have seen a lot of good defensive chops for us to be really encouraged by with Bertāns.
No doubt. And in defense of you just handing out the A's, the team is winning 80% of their games.
Sure. Well, no. We're getting to some non-A's. Rest assured, I give Bertāns probably an A minus.
Okay.
I counted on him to be a little bit better shooter than he is, but I think that stroke is coming. I think.
He's acclimating to the NBA ball and the NBA 3-point line. So that's going to take some time.
Once he gets that stroke, and especially as a guy 6'10", adds a little bit of weight in the offseason. He's just 210 right now. I'd love him to be about maybe 220. If he adds a little bit of weight and he gets that stroke, that American stroke, I think we're I, I, I really
He does stand quite a bit behind the line quite often, though, right?
Well, he does, but at the same time, there's a guy that's got – there's so much similarity in his game and Dirk Nowitzki's, except, you know, you've got so much more of a ceiling on Bertans that the potential of other areas – you know, Dirk really didn't have the potential when it came to defense. He just didn't care. He couldn't move laterally. Bertans can. So if Bertans can find that stroke as a size guy and as a stretch four – holy cow. I'm not going to say he's the next Dirk. I hope not. I can't stand Dirk. But we've got a good piece to work with. I'll give him an A-.
All right. And then we've got another guy who needs – who not just needs to, but has added quite a bit of muscle and weight to his frame in Kyle Anderson, who had – what was it? Five steals against the Cavs? Yeah. Picked LeBron twice? It was part of the reason why they came back in that game after they had been down. So I mean, he hasn't been used much recently. That's probably the highlight of his last 10 games was that Cavs game. But he played very well on that big stage.
Yeah, Kyle's one of those guys that I have to get revved up for. Like I need someone. I need a friend like you in my life to have to talk me into Kyle Anderson quite often. You've done this several times. You've had to talk me off the ledge with Kyle Anderson. At a certain point, you gotta think, I'm crawling out on this window ledge and I'm standing here multiple times only to go back inside. Maybe I should either move or just jump. I mean, you gotta wonder why you're out on that ledge so many times. And with Kyle, I just can't get over that. There's something, maybe it's in his speed. I'm not going to say the word motor with Kyle. You'll notice I will not use the word motor. Not saying he doesn't have one. I'm just simply not choosing to use the word motor.
It's amazing with Kyle. He is faster this year than he was last year. It's not necessarily – here's the thing. I've been specifically watching Kyle over the last few games that he's been in and running plays back that he's in and watching the guys running next to him. He is so long, his legs are so long, that even when he's moving with guys, and they're trying to keep up with him, and guys are moving along, they don't seem to be moving slow. He's moving slow, and yet he's not being left behind. And I think it's just kind of that loping gait that he has, those big old long stride. Right. He had three straight because of how long he is. He had three straight drives to the he had finished at the basket three straight times in a game this past week, and it was just every single one of them looked like, well, there's no way he's moving way too slow to, well, there he is, leg up, okay, well, there he is dunking, well, there he is legging up again. And so that's the first thing is that he just one of those guys that doesn't look very fast but is faster than he looks. And then secondly, he's adding that weight to his frame. I would not be surprised if he gets to be a legit four, power forward, thick guy as his career goes on. And the things that that he's sacrificing as a two or a three, suddenly are not deficits for him as a power forward. And if he's capable of getting in there and doing everything else, delivering the ball, passing the way he does, playing defense, and his defense is, almost want to call it stellar, because of his ability to gauge where guys are about to pass the ball and even steal bounce passes by whipping his body around and putting his hands so far, catching the ball coming up off of the floor.
Yeah.
Being passed from the guy he's guarding, just phenomenal stuff like that. So
no, he's definitely got the skill. I think it's telling that I constantly have to be talked into him. So I leave Kyle Anderson at B.
All right.
I'm gonna give him a solid B.
All right, then we've got
maybe B minus, but we'll just solid B. We'll leave him there.
We got Bryn Forbes to end with.
I'm gonna give Bryn Forbes a C.
Okay.
Yeah, because in my book, Bryn, you had one job. We heard about it what an incredible shooter this guy is. I mean, Pop called him a poor man Steph Curry. So the bar was set fairly high. Bryn, you just had to come out there and make some shots. Tick, 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 tick. I mean, it's still, I'm still waiting. I mean, it's I just think the requirement for Brin has been, the bar has been set pretty low for what he has to deliver, and it just seems like he has not made an impression.
When your job is shooting, and and especially long distance shooting,
you need to make the shots.
On the season, you're averaging just a hair over 23% of your threes, and from the field, you're hitting 36% of your shots. There's a reason you're getting sent down to Austin all the time, but the Spurs don't need him sitting on the end of the bench right now. He's a garbage time guy who's developing his game. He's a rookie that needs to be in the D League, and that's where he spent most of the year.
And he could turn into something, and I have hope in Brin. I don't want to just see him, la provita la away. But I do like Brin. I think he can deliver, but right now he just seems like a glorified D-leaguer that is going to be really good and put up great numbers in the D-league, but has no business being in the show. And I'd like for that to change for him, but at the time being, I can't give him any higher than a C, maybe C minus.
You got a C there. So we've got one member of the Spurs bench that has not made a mistake, a single mistake all season long.
Right.
Joel Anthony also has not played a minute, so that would be why he's been perfect so far.
Some would give him an A for that lack of a mistake.
I would give him an I. I give him an I for incomplete. He hasn't turned in any of his work, but he's also got a 100 average, too. So,
I'm going to give him a C. All right. Because he's a center. He's a center, so I'm going to give
him. Well done. So, are you going to grade Pop, too?
Oh, how do you, I don't know how you grade Pop. It's kind of like your wife. Like, what do you say? Yeah, she's gorgeous. I mean, I don't know how. I think, what were you telling me? Somebody on PTR put it best this week, and I've heard this said before, but it's a brilliant point. It never gets old. I don't believe that the Coach of the Year award should ever be handed out as long as Greg Popovich is still coaching.
Oh, it was Michael Oehrle.
Give it to him. Was it Oehrle?
Yeah, it was Oehrle.
It's a great point. It's 100% true. You legitimately, and we used to say this jokingly, and we'd kind of wink and elbow each other, and everybody'd roll their eyes because, oh, you guys are just homers. There's not a lot of eye rolls anymore. Everybody pretty much agrees. It's kind of like, race to second. I mean, it's who's the second best coach of the league? Here you go, Coach of the Year award. Because Pop is so far ahead and above everybody else. With the injuries we've had, and we're talking about Bryn Forbes and Joel Anthony.
Look, you had a team playing without Kawhi Leonard, playing without Pau Gasol.
Yes.
Playing without Tony Parker.
That's three Hall of Famers, folks.
Three Hall of Famers. And three starters go up to Toronto.
Second best team in the East,
which is not saying much, but and beat them. Of course, it was touch and go right at the end, and they won by not too much, but they still won.
Take that off the table completely. You have a coach that is playing without his starting point guard and without his starting center on a team we've had some questions. I mean, we haven't been as defensively strong as we've liked to been. I mean, there's been some questions here and there. We go into Cleveland. Well, they've been losing. They're still the defending champions with the best player on the planet. We go into Cleveland and we beat them. I mean, there's so many things on Pop's resume that you stop using paper and you use a thumb drive at this point just because you don't have the room. To stack all of the accolades, he can self-deprecate all he wants. I don't think there's any argument whatsoever.
I think the argument is over. I agree.
I do. And granted, we had LeBron coming out, a week ago saying, Greg Popovich is the greatest coach of all time.
Yep.
I think 50% of that was the F you, Phil Jackson, for your posse comments.
Okay.
And another 50% of that was, I kind of buy into it. Give it a 400%, but it still has some credibility that reigning perennial MVP and champion LeBron James gives that endorsement. I don't know how you give Pop anything other than an A. I would say A+, but I want to encourage him to improve even.
Well, if there's anything that's going to encourage Greg Popovich, finding out that Seth Warren only gave him an A and not an A plus is going to do it for sure. But you just mentioned LeBron James, and we've been at this for a while. I think it's time for us to get into superfluous poppycock. And did something happen with LeBron James this week that might encourage you to add him or want to discuss him in this section of the podcast that we dedicate for unnecessary foolishness?
You know, here's our superfluous poppycock. Speaking of Greg Popovich, devoted to one of his most famous quotes and attributes, I'm listening this week. Well, let's go back in time. I think I feel the way a lot of us feel. We vacillate between hatred and tolerance of LeBron. And some would go so far as to say, I like him. But at best, I think we can all claim it's a vacillation. It shifts. It doesn't remain.
Every so once in a while, right? It is like this.
On a steady course of I like LeBron, it shifts to, I tolerate him. And some of us, it goes from hating. I erred on the other side. I hate LeBron. I can't stand him. He's the ultimate example of a spoiled millennial that could be so much more and just isn't. And I just, the whole charade, the whole production, his legacy is pretty much cemented with all of the lost finals. I won't even accentuate the finals that he's constructed inorganically for himself and that count as wins. Let's deal with the lost finals. Let's deal with the production of the decision. Let's deal with this public relations fraud.
Cut to the chase. What did he do this week?
Okay. Came out this week, and this is right on the heels of me kind of making a decision to vacillate over to the middle. You know, the Greg Popovich, greatest coach of all time, all of that kind of stuff. He kind of pushed me more towards the middle off hating him, and then this week happens. And he comes out, and I think it was us. We have a tendency to break LeBron James, if you notice over his career and his track record. It was mainly after us. It was after their following game that they also lost. He comes out in the media and just swearing and expletives, and we need an effing playmaker, and this is ridiculous. But the line, we need a playmaker, blew my mind.
Isn't he a playmaker?
Payroll is $130 million.
That's tops in the NBA, right?
In the league. Oh, yeah. You have LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love all on a team. You created inorganic super teams. You made that a thing in our league, and now you're going to bitch about it. Now you're saying you don't have enough. Why? Because Golden State caught lightning in a bottle for a year or two? And you're throwing it's just wah. He's upset that they lost Dellavedova, and they need a backup point guard, and they need a backup center to replace Mozgov, and all of this kind of stuff. Well, the craziest thing about all of this, because everybody says, well, really, he's the GM. He controls everything there. He and Carmelo Anthony are friends, right, JR?
Yeah.
The Knicks flat out come out and offer up Carmelo for Love this last week. You know what the Cavs say? Mm. Nah. Yeah, we good. Really? Because aside from the baggage that Kevin Love has had, the discontent he's had in the locker room, the odd man out status that has been kind of looming for 2 years, he did help you last year in the championship, I'll give you that. Year before that, he was a no-show because he had his injury. But aside from all of that, is Carmelo not a better player today? Plus, that would shut LeBron up. It would get him off the news and get him away from the cameras. The superfluous poppycock to me is that his mouth is open anymore. Anything he says, I think it's calculated. I think it's fraudulent. I think it's not genuine. For somebody to come out with $130 million payroll coming off a championship win to bellyache about his organization and how he needs a playmaker, it puts me right back, if not further, into the hating LeBron James territory.
I guess that article that you sent me about what he said, the part that bothered me the most about it was the fact that he says that they're not better than this year than they were last year, roster wise. Right. And I'm thinking, you're the NBA champs. When you win, you're at the top. It's so hard to get to the top anyway, but to get to the top and get better, it's great that you have that expectation, But it's not great that that's like a demand or that's the only. I was like, well, I mean, you do the best you can. He's got freaking Kyle Korver handed to you on a silver platter by another team in your own division in your own conference.
Right. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes,
and after all, and like you just got him. You haven't even integrated him into the offense fully yet. You got him coming off the bench, a Kyle Korver, one of the best 3-point shooters in the history of the NBA. But you're upset because you don't have something else. It just seems like it's like the day after Christmas, and you're upset because you don't have a pony. It's like, look underneath the Christmas tree. Look at all the gorgeous gifts that you've got. Look at all the great things that you asked for that you got.
Guys, there's got no a pony. Box. It's a pretty box. Look, I want a box like that. Quote, we got 14 guys in here, James said after the Sacramento Kings lost. We need to be ready every night who we got in here. We got to play. We can't play fantasy basketball. We got who we got, and we got to go out and play. Shut up. Go out and play. You've got 30-some-odd minutes. He's in his upper 30s. I want to say 36, 37 minutes a game. 25 points a game this year. Who's got to go out and play? You're the playmaker. You're the king, right? The self-anointed king. You go out and put that team together. Yeah, you won the championship for him last year. And yeah, you kept him in the championship the year before that. Shut up. I mean, I'm just tired of hearing it from this guy. It's like every 6 months to a year, there's some new dramatic slight that he's got to come out and bellyache about, but there's no empirical evidence that he's got anything to stand on. They could play better. I'll give you that. Well, you know what? You now got Richard Jefferson. There's your first problem. We could have warned you. We did warn you about that, even though we don't like you. We told you, hey, you might want to take a pass on Richard Jefferson. Now you're stuck with Richard Jefferson.
Yeah, they're stuck with him. They're still the cream of the crop in the East, but they've won just 4 of the last 10, and things are not all peaches and cream in Cleveland for sure.
No,
I'm glad.
But I think the reason why he's upset, and a lot of this, yeah, they want him to go out. I don't know how they can spend any more money. I mean, I don't know how they can go get somebody else. I mean, you want to try to retain most of your key cogs on a championship team?
Yeah.
You don't win multiple championships to kind of learn that, so I forgive him for that. But Dellavedova's a big one. Might should have fought a little bit harder to keep him, but he is one of those guys, and it goes back to our roster. Do we have guys that truly want to win? Do we have guys that want the money? Do we have guys that get a paycheck like Gary Neal and go, peace, I'm gone? Dellavedova was one of those guys. You should have fought a little harder to keep him. Maybe don't put all of your eggs into the Tristan Thompson basket. Maybe keep guys like Dellavedova so you have, I don't know, a backup point guard. But the mere fact of this, even if they had Dellavedova right now, you're not beating Golden State. And you know that. So rather than just maybe, I don't know, work out a little bit more, score a little bit more, keep your thoughts to yourself, you go in front of the cameras and just cry. And it's just off-putting. So that was my superfluous for the week.
Woof.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's like my issues, JR.
That might have been the longest poppycock that section since we started this whole thing.
I get fucked. When I drop a superfluous poppycock, I let it go. I can't. Well, now that it's out of my system, I can also congratulate Houston at this point, which, if you guys have not noticed, Houston's 4-6 over their last 10 games. They're now 4 games back from San Antonio, so good luck
for all. Go 4 games back. Yeah. And that's 4 games back in the standings.
In the standings.
They are 6 games back in the loss column.
Right.
So that's even bigger.
Yeah. Well, and good luck to Dallas. Still 20 games back from San Antonio as well. But we don't want to leave Dallas out. But Houston is really the one that we're most concerned with this year, perhaps this decade.
Well, that'll do it for us on this episode, Pounders. We'll see you next time. Until then, keep safe and let it fly.